Dr. Impostar.
This is Professor Feather.
This is the Midnight Gadfly, who sounds nothing like Impostar.
And this is the real Dr. Impostar. And you are experiencing...
Unsigned Radio. All right, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going to review one of the greatest movies ever made. It is one of the greatest books ever written. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. We are here
Dune.
To review.
The spice must flow.
Oh, Breakfast of Champions. Breakfast of Champions was originally written by Kurt Vonnegut, and it was kind of his magnum opus that brought together all of his characters from previous books into one novel, and became a kind of multimedia extravaganza. The movie came about in 1999 with an all-star cast. We've got Bruce Willis, Barbara Hershey.
When did the book come out?
It's a good question. I'm about to refer to the resident expert here soon, all right, Professor Feather? When did the book come out?
I can't tell you because I don't remember.
Well, then you've lost your status as resident expert.
I think it was
1967 when I was born. I'm not sure.
No, it was like in the 70s.
It was in the 70s. That's what I meant.
We were living on Brunel Street, I think. So that would have been, 71? 1970, 1971, something like that? I don't know. I'm not going to look it up. I don't give a fuck.
I will. It was 1973.
Okay. That's close.
So yeah, it was 1973.
I knew it was right in there.
So this is Alan Rudolph was the director and writer and wrote the movie with Kurt Vonnegut. All right. So you had Kurt Vonnegut involved in the writing of the movie to translate it from book to movie. Breakfast of Champion was the first Kurt Vonnegut movie or book I ever read. And Professor Feather said, no, you should read these other ones and then read that one because it'll mean a lot more. But I read it anyhow, and it still blew me away. The drawings, it in and of itself stands on its own. Like, you don't have to read all the other stuff. But when I did then go back and read everything else and then read Breakfast of Champions, it was a whole different experience, which I thought was awesome. The whole book is almost like he's talking directly to you. He does these little devices like, listen, you know, he'll say, listen, period. And then he'll start talking about something, you know, and then he has the drawings, right, that are in the book. The movie, I think, is a great translation into movie form. You know what I mean? It's not the book, but it is a movie, and it captures all the characters and just the insanity of the existential crisis that every character has in the whole story and in the book. So,
and he wrote the book for his 50th birthday.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it was his transition.
Yeah. Yep.
He was saying, now that this is everything from my past, now we move on from here, you know, and, unfortunately, he didn't stick to his word. Yeah. But, you know,
so the story is about Dwayne Hoover, a car salesman who owns a car dealership.
Car dealership.
Yeah.
He owns a dealership.
And he's very famous in his community. People love him. They trust him. You know, he's
played by Bruce Willis.
Played by Bruce Willis, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've got a whole cast of characters that are just bizarre. You know, you've got Wayne Hubler, who's an ex-con who sees Dwayne Hoover and says, this is my salvation, and wants to come and work for him. You've got Nick Nolte's character, who is a cross-dresser.
Harry the Saber.
Yeah, who is, you know, is conflicted, and, you know, he's got his wife or girlfriend in there is his actual girlfriend in real life at that time. I don't know if they still are. And then his part, everybody is brilliant, I think, in this film. Like, the way they act and the way they approach their parts is just amazing. And they have this kind of microcosm. It's literally this dealership, and then there's this hotel, and then there's the lounge in the hotel, and then there's the diner that people go to. And it's all this kind of little triangle that they have. Except for the outsider, who is Kilgore Trout.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And Kilgore Trout's story is amazing, because, you know, he's a science fiction writer who's
Albert Finney.
Yeah, Albert Finney is great. Yeah. And, you know, he's got this thing with mirrors, you know, which he calls leaks. And he's all about, yeah, there's, so I don't want to get too far into it right now, but let's jump to Dr. Head, because I know you love this movie and I want to hear why.
Yeah, I didn't. There are things about it that I really do like. I thought the performances were all really good. I do. I thought that it captured the manic nightmare, the manic absurdity of the book, because that was my first entry into reading Kurt Vonnegut.
Okay, yeah.
And like with you, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is just, I've never read anything like this, you know? So it opened the doors for other Vonnegut, and I think it captures that mania really, really well, kind of like Fear and Loathing. It captures the spirit or the feeling.
It has a Gillian-esque feel.
Yeah, there's a feeling that it creates. But I just don't think it does what it's supposed to do really well. And Kurt Vonnegut did not like this, even though he helped write it. He said it was painful to watch. So I don't know what the criteria was for him, but it just seemed to not. I don't know. It just left me unsatisfied in the end with how things were progressing. You know, I don't know. It was just like, it seemed like it was trying for something, but couldn't quite get there. And I don't know how to articulate it right now about that.
Yeah, what about you, Professor Feather?
I liked the movie really a lot. But I went into it, you know, not knowing the book and knowing that there's no way you can reproduce the book. And so you have to come up with some kind of a form. And I really liked, I was more appreciative of it. I just watched it again like twice. Yeah, and I watched it last night again for, you know, like the third time. How Terry Gilliam, it seems, I mean, there's the drugged scenes and stuff are just, they're, you know, that's Terry Gilliam. That's, you know, it was, I think the only thing I had, my main criticism of the movie was that sometimes I didn't get quite, maybe I missed something in the book. I didn't quite get the frenetic part it being quite so visual and visceral in its form, which I think the movie did. And the book is more internalization toward, as opposed to externalization. but there again, you, it's impossible to do the internal. Well, he, yeah. Well, this,
and maybe
is,
that's what,
let me,
the,
let me back
is.
Up. It's not impossible to do the internalization. It's just, it's a harder way to conceive and bring your concept forward, because he does, I think he does a great job of the visualization and conceptualization of the idea of Kilgore Trout. To me, the Kilgore Trout is the essence of the book.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's
is.
The essence. He's the essence of the movie,
yes,
too. And so you have to look at it from that point of view. Yeah, I loved it. Like, he gets picked up by the one truck driver, and they're in the station. He's sitting there, and he talks to the truck driver about mirrors being leaks. He says, "Oh yeah, you're looking at a leak. What's that? A mirror? There are leaks to it, you know, another dimension." And he's looking in that side mirror, and he sees the two kids. He sees the vision,
yeah,
in that side mirror, you know. And I, there's just little things like that that I really, well, like about the
and
movie.
The driver goes, "You got to fix the leak." And he's like,
yes,
what? He goes,
yes,
the mirror. Yeah, he's like, yeah. You know. Yeah. So he gets it. But you also, one of the drivers is Owen Wilson, you know what I mean? And then they,
yeah,
get, what's the other guy? Shit, we've seen him in, yeah, tons of stuff. The, in The Postman.
He was, yeah.
He's the main bad guy in The Postman. Oh, shit, what is his name? Yeah, you get Buck Henry's in there. Oh, Will Patton. Will Patton is one of the...
Will Patton.
Yeah, he's one of the,
okay, yeah,
drivers.
Yeah, Buck Henry's fun. Yeah. And I do like, who had the blonde wig? He was doing the television host thing. Was that Will or who was that? He was,
well, Owen Wilson was.
Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
I think it was Owen Wilson. Yeah,
he was Monty. Yeah, he was Monty Rapp.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of things I like about it, even though I didn't like the movie. It's like at a deeper level, like it was just unsatisfying. But I can still see and appreciate what I think what they were trying to do visually was capture that internalization, yeah, in,
yeah,
some way.
Yeah.
And it didn't always work for me, but maybe that's what it was. But
yeah.
But again,
and
Omar Epps is really good. He's like bananas. He's coming in selling cars for $36. You know, I mean, there's, you know, like, that's
Omar,
an absurdity.
Omar Epps, yeah.
Yeah, because like when at the last shot, when you go inside, the dealership is empty. Like, it's cleared out. You know, like, he's been selling cars and just like giving them away. And like, you know, just the insanity is definitely on display. And I did appreciate how everyone leaned into it. Like, their performances were way over the top. I mean, they almost had to be. There was all kinds of stuff going on. But I mean, so I applaud that. But even if I didn't like the movie, I thought there were, yeah, parts that were done very, very well.
The my main criticism is I didn't like the cinematography real well. It had almost a TV quality to it. There was a sharpness to it that wasn't cinematic looking.
Yeah.
And I kind of that kind of bothered me to a degree, you know, not a whole lot, but it just, there was like scenes that I thought that scene is too clear, you know, that scene is just too pristine looking, that if a good cinematographer would have made that scene, you know, look better.
I just attributed that to it being about a car salesman who's making commercials. And I love all the symbolism, like, especially at the end, like when he has to put the boots on and,
mm-hmm,
cross the marsh. Above him is his big face, and it says, "Get off here."
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's brilliant. That's just
smart. I think there was a lot of that in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's, you know, and I could see Kurt Vonnegut not, probably just going, well, you know, it was a good try, but you know, it just didn't quite capture. It doesn't quite capture Vonnegut for me, but it does in another way, you know. But yeah, it's. I don't know. I really liked it. I really liked it too.
I thought
it was very well done. And yeah, there's a lot of good back. Things in the background that they've you know, just all kinds of really, really cool effects and stuff. Who's this director? What else has he done?
Not a whole lot that you probably realize. He is popular with, like, you know, some of the stuff that he did do. So he did Trouble in Mind in 1985, Choose Me in 1984, Afterglow. you know, the moderns. Like, none of these are stuff that I'm real familiar with.
Yeah, me neither.
I think the last thing I saw by him after this was the Secret Lives of Dentists, which is pretty interesting. Yeah,
I never saw that.
Yeah, it's
it's very fulfilling.
Yeah. That's good. It was Campbell Scott, Hope Davis, Dennis Leary. Yeah, it's actually not a bad. It's worth seeing.
Well, and I will come back. I'll have a caveat for this movie. I mean, yeah, since the early 70s, mid 70s, I guess it would be, I've had a rock band of one form or another that was called Kilgore Trout. So I kind of have a weak
with
spot.
With permission
from Kurt Vonnegut, yes, to use the name for the name of our rock band.
That'd have been awesome if he showed up to one of your shows sometime.
That would have been good.
Yeah. That's the fantasy story you can write then.
What author makes a cameo in Breakfast of Champions?
Oh, man. Other than Buck Henry.
Well, Buck Henry's...
He's not really an author. That's true. Let me see.
He's a writer, but yeah.
Who would you consider the successor to Kurt Vonnegut?
Oh, is he in this? Tom Robbins.
Yeah, he's in the bar when Omar Epps comes in.
That's right. I forgot about that. I didn't even look. I forgot about that.
His name in the movie is Pesky Weber.
Yeah.
And it's like during the scene when Dwayne Hoover like goes crazy and beats everybody with the synthesizer. You know, and then
Because he's the only person with free will.
Right. Well, and that's what brings everything together. The robots, you know, and the whole thing with that, and that because what's his face? Kilgore Trout is Kurt Vonnegut in the story,
yes.
You know.
Yeah.
It's great because he recognizes that he's set him loose, you know, as the only thing with free will, and that he's God, you know, because he sees himself in the reflection that he thinks are leaks in his eyes. And then when he comes back, he goes, no, you're the continuum. You're the continuum machine, you know, and stuff like that. And then he starts going around and labeling everybody. And so like Wayne Hubler is the trusting machine. You're the trusting machine.
Yes. Yeah.
And he goes, I am. And he lays back and he says fairyland over top of him. Yeah. You know what I mean? I loved it. And I think that was an homage to the pictures in the book, you know, from the original book. When he goes, Kilgore Trout, and it goes through the vent and you watch the words go through and it hits, you know, Dwayne Hoover's his ears and stuff like that. And it is, the whole thing is all about existential dread. You know what I mean? It is like, what is my life about? You know, Barbara Hershey, you know, being a, and I think Bunny, great.
Yeah.
You know,
Lucas Haas.
Lucas Haas, yeah. And that's him singing, which I think is great.
Good. He does great in that.
He does great, yeah. And I love the fact that he's in a bomb shelter doing his practicing, and his dad doesn't acknowledge him, you know, and says, you used to be a, you know, such a good...
Until the end.
Until he's kind of dressed like he's going to be a play a vampire on Broadway, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of,
or Liberace. You know,
or a Liberace or, yeah, a skater. Yeah. Yeah, a skater outfit. Like he's a skater doing Dracula. Yes.
Well, I like the guy who comes and says, I'll be your agent. And, you know, the guy's actually, you know, you obviously smitten with him,
yes.
You know.
Yeah, he keeps hugging
him. Because later on, he's leaving. No, you can't leave me. I love you.
He keeps hugging him.
The car. the movie, that's, and the book, that's the whole premise of the book, is that existential, it's a crux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what he was looking at. I'm 50. Yeah. That's a crux in a human's life.
Yeah.
For now, especially, you know, hell, you know, years ago, that you're if you were 50, you were, you know, the grand elder. But, you know, but back then, you know, in the 70s, 50 was met. You know, you're on the downside. You know, you're going this way. Now you're going this way. And how do you look at life? From both perspectives, you know, and that's what the whole book was about. I mean,
the book in the movie is way ahead of its time in terms of addressing, you know, cross-dressing and, you know,
yes,
what your own internal identity is, you know. And I love that his wife is watching him on TV going, no, don't go there. Don't go there. Because he's going off on these tangents. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, oops, oops. And he takes everything off. And she's like, yes, yes, you do it. And then he's fucking, you see him running across the parking lot, escaping the straitjackets because they all think he's
and
nuts.
That's what, and that's a good, right there was just a good image because at the time,
yeah,
oh yeah, if you're gonna, you know, you want to wear women's clothes, you must be crazy.
Yeah,
you know. So let's. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and Nick Nolte's brilliant. I think everybody is. It's like the performances are brilliant. Yeah,
performances are spectacular, top to bottom, everyone.
Yeah. Yes, I can't think of his wife's her real name.
Barbara Hershey.
No.
Oh.
Nolte's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Harry LeSabre's wife. She's from Talk Radio.
She is from Talk Radio, yes.
She was the fast talking girl.
She's a comedian, too.
Yeah.
She's funny.
But she's good. I like her. Her role wasn't big, but it was really good. Just she played it. Yeah, and like you said, Dr. Head, it's everybody's over the top because that's the whole object is everybody's questioning their existence, you know, and what you know. Well, that's not really true because
Vicki Lewis,
Dwayne Hubler doesn't.
He's in the moment. Existence,
his existence is so simple, you know. He's that simple aspect of life that you kind of crave, you know. He's like oblivious to almost everything, you know. He has this one purpose, and it makes him happy.
Yeah,
you know, and that's all he cares about. You know, that's his existence. You know, and then you think about his backstory. You know, he came from prison. What was his back life? You know, he's had this, you know, obviously, you know, kind of a crazy hard life, and then he's glommed onto Wayne Hoover because our names are so alike that we're destined to be together, you know, and work together. Even did you see in the one scene he says he gives the guy one guy his card and it's Wayne Hoover, but he's got crossed out. It says Wayne Hoover.
Well, I think it's interesting.
Dwayne Hoover.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too that Nick Nolte's character LeSabre, you know, is threatened by him when he first brings him on, but does all the things and says, pick a car, you know.
Because he totally misunderstands.
Yeah, he doesn't know what's going on at all. But then later on, he's hanging out with him and talking to him and saying, you got to fill this out so I can get the Hawaii vacation, you know. And, you know, he's like, but I don't want to go. I don't want to leave. And he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, yeah. So, Omar Epps is great, too, when he's, like, jumping around, like, oh, you know. But, and then he's cooking on the car engine. You know, he's
crazy. Yeah.
He made that whole, you know, that's his whole life right there.
Right.
He lived in the car, you know.
Yeah, right.
He showed the one scene where he's in that, I like those, the portable shower.
Yes.
He's home.
I mean, that's what it is.
He's home. Yes.
Yes. Exactly. He's settled in and he's in for the long haul.
A lot of that is about the idealistic life we see in, you know, celebrities or local celebrities or, you know, whatever it is that we think they're real people because they're real people advertising their businesses. But we, you know, we wonder, you know, so like we used to have those in Toledo, like the guy that was the car stereo salesman. You'd go to, we would go to a restaurant and you'd see him there, people would be swamping him. You know what I mean? They'd be like, oh man, you're so-and-so, you know. You know, and because at the end of every commercial, he would just go, turtle. Remember that guy? Yeah, he would, it'd mean nothing. You know what I mean? But you remembered the fact that, and people would walk around going, turtle. And he'd be like,
yeah.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, I think that kind of celebrity, you know. And I think that's what's great about Breakfast of Champions is it's examining a lot of stuff about how we interact with society, but also media.
And consumerism.
Consumerism, yep.
Oh, and Vonnegut touches on all of that in the book. You know, it's just, I just don't think the book has... Vonnegut, to me, has never imbued any kind of a real frenetic feeling in me. It's always been more a calming, even though it's the worst things in the world, the way he presents them, it's there's something calming about how he presents.
It's very simple prose.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's very conversational.
Exactly.
Conversational.
One of the one of the simplest writers ever.
I would say though that Breakfast of Champions is one of his more frenetic novels. Like a lot of the other ones, because it's jumping around and there's all this kind of like, and then he's got to explain things to you. You know, the narrator. So there's a lot of that kind of
stuff. Showing you pictures. And
showing
like
you pictures, yeah.
This is an anus.
But this is an asshole.
This is a beaver.
Yeah.
I had read everything he'd written up to that point.
Right. Yeah.
And so I had a whole mindset of Vonnegut, and so I think I might look at that book differently, you know, than most people do, because it was his breakout book too. It was a bestseller, you know. I mean, big time, and that's what really put him on the map. And because you could, like you said, you could read the book. You didn't really need to know. You know, he references like Elliot Rosewater. You don't. He's a weird character. If you don't know, you know, he's just another weird character in a series of weird characters. If you don't know who he actually is, you know,
well, he didn't use characters from everything prior to that either. What's the one with Ice Nine in it?
No, that's a whole, because that book is set outside of the universe. Okay.
What's the book called? I can't remember.
Cat's Cradle.
Cat's Cradle. That's it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, again, which has a lot of ridiculous stuff in it. You know, you'll get the hook, you know, if you're a Bacchanist. Yep. And Bacchanists, you know, pray by touching souls, which means they take their shoes off and they touch their feet together. And if you get caught touching your feet together, you get the hook.
And Ice Nine, which is the main thing, it's a scientific discovery gone awry, you know.
Yeah, the people are trying to get a hold of because it freezes every water molecule in the face.
It's essentially the end of the earth.
Yeah,
you know, the end of human civilization. Yeah. Anyway, that's what the book is kind of leads to. You know?
Yeah, and we had no Tralfamadorians in this either. So
I was waiting. I was kind of hoping he'd bring them up because, you know, any race that communicates by tap dancing and farting has to be, you know, that's got to be a cool race.
And in the, what's the one with the twins? That movie is another movie that should be seen. I don't think it's as good as Breakfast of Champions, but. It has Jerry Lewis and.
Boing? Oh, wait. Where he plays all the different kit roles?
No. Happy Fuff Day.
Happy Fuff Day. Yeah, it's the for the birthday.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't remember the name of the book, the movie. Good book.
Oop, okay.
But yeah, there again, you know, Kurt Vonnegut took over the mantle of Mark Twain. You know, he became, you know, the humorist of my generation, pretty much. You know, one of the main humorists.
Slapstick.
Slapstick. Yeah, Slapstick. Yeah, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah, the book. And the Tralfamadorian is Pat Morita.
Yes. Yeah.
And their Tralfamadorians are tiny. So this little spaceship lands.
Yeah, I actually like the movie Slapstick.
Oh, I think it's really good. Yeah.
It's a good book, too. But yeah. But Breakfast of Champions, yeah, holds a special place, you know, in my literary lexicon. You know, it's right up there with just about anything I can think of as a novel and as a, you know, a piece of literature. More so than a lot of stuff he wrote. A lot of his stuff is kind of Kilgore Trout-ish, you know. Sirens of Titan and you know, and even Ice Nine is kind of, that's his Kilgore Troutish aspect. I would like to say, for anybody that's never seen the movie, read the book, Kilgore Trout was a science fiction writer, but the only place that you could find his books or his stories were in pornography magazines.
Pornography, yeah.
Such as Wide Open Beaver. That was the one I remember.
Well, in the movie and in the book, his conversations with the people he's hitchhiking with, because he got this $1,000, you know, and he's got that, what is it, the parrot with him or whatever. And then those conversations are golden. And again, I love the fact that he's the sane one at the end, that he comes in and says, no, you're a continuum. You're the one that continues. You're the one that keeps things happening. You're the nice guy or whatever, you know, because he sees that by telling him he's, you know, the other thing, he's like, you're the free will, which fucked him up. You know?
Yeah, well, that's what made him say. Yeah. That's why he's beating people.
But then I love that.
I'm the only person with free will.
Yeah, I love the fact that Wayne Hoover is then, you know, labeling all the machines. You know, you're the boy machine. You're the, you know, whatever the agent was or whatever, something machine. You know, and but then he goes to the good side and he goes, you're the trusting machine. And that's when Fairyland appears, which I think is great. And he just, that's his end of the movie. He just falls back, you know. Nick Nolte's end in the movie is him running in his stockings and dress from the people with straitjackets as he busts
slip
out of
it. Whatever it is, a dress slip. I thought it looked more like a slip.
Yeah, whatever it was. It's so funny. And the fact that Nick Nolte would take a part like that, you know, and do such a good job. You know,
yeah,
like his manicness.
Oh, his manicness is the best in the whole
movie.
It's
palpable.
Yeah. Yes,
his struggle. Yeah,
yeah.
I think Bruce Willis does an amazing job.
He does a pretty good job
because he makes me tense. You know, and then I
love the love making scene and his wig flopping.
Glenn Hetty, is it? That's his secretary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's good.
He's talking to Dwayne Hubler, LeSabre, you know, he's sitting there and he's got the outfit on because he's not looking at Hawaiian at all. And he's going, you know, that's a comb over. So when he's walking in the wind, it looks like it's waving at you or whatever. So I said, there's all kinds of moments. And I think, Dr. Head, I would say, even though you may not want to, I would watch it again at some point, you know, just to like look at the nuances and to kind of get the vibe that you can.
When's the last time you read the book, Dr. Head?
Oh, decades.
You should actually try to read it again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a quick read.
It's a quick read. And I just bought it a couple months ago. You know, and I hadn't read it for years and years.
Well, it was this episode that made me want to look for some Kurt Vonnegut, because I have a whole bunch of ebooks. And I was just looking through. And I'm like, oh, I don't have any Kurt Vonnegut. So I found the entire library, as well as like a bunch of his books that are audiobooks read by other famous people.
Oh yeah, that.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take that too. So
yeah,
I just bought an ebook of his unpublished short stories, and it had I think three short stories and then an article at the back, you know, like a magazine article or something. That was really good. Yeah, the stories they're good, but. Yeah, I think they're really good. I don't know why they're unpublished. I thought they were really good. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, I remember, like, growing up, Professor Feather, were not a fan of a lot of his books after Breakfast of Champions.
No. He did change. There was a change. And there's a couple that are really good. But there's like the one that I really disliked was Galapagos, because he pulled a bullshit move and brought Kilgore Trout back, and he, you know, had said he would not do that, and it just didn't feel right. It just didn't gel, you know. But he did a couple others after that I liked really well.
I liked Galapagos only because I put the correlation of Kilgore Trout going off into this alternate dimension or dying or whatever it was that saying he did, to the fact that the Galapagos Island is a It is an anomaly on the face of the earth. Like it is, nothing like any other part of the earth. The wildlife, all of that stuff. There's wildlife there that is seen nowhere else. You know, and on this tiny island. You know,
I just didn't like the story very well. Didn't grab me.
And I loved Bluebeard because it was.
About, I like Bluebeard.
It was about a painter. So I mean, like, you know.
What's the one about? What's oh shit? Where he's in prison? He worked for Nixon. Damn, I can't remember the name of the book. Anyway, I like that. I like that. Well, I have that here. I was going to read it. I have it in hardback, but
yeah,
kind of hard to read hardback.
When it's too. Funny because you know Tom Robbins being in that you know in the movie is great because Tom Robbins. One of his writing idols was Kurt Vonnegut, you know, one of the.
I think he took over the mantle, you know,
I do too, yeah.
Of that, the humorist, American humorist.
And the whimsy, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
We need a lot of now because I'm watching shit on TV that is like, it's all fucking post-apocalyptic. It's all alien invasions, doom and gloom. It is like, I'm like, I just need something that's not, you know. That's why I like things like the one Bad Monkey or whatever it is. You know,
Bad Monkey. Yeah,
on
Apple TV,
which is great. I'm like, finally, something that's humorous, has some tense moments, but the main character always stays unflappable and it's just, you know.
Vince Vaughn,
yeah, it's great. But everybody on that's great.
Yeah, it's a good series. It's still got its dark spots.
It does, yeah. But he is almost always unflappable. Like, he just always comes out of it and is just like, you know, life is... this is how we live.
He kind of plays Vince Vaughn character. I mean, that's kind of a Vince Vaughn trait.
Have you ever seen him in an interview? That dude is really fucking smart. Like, really smart.
I don't think I've ever seen him in
it. And he's funny because he tells the story. He goes, the only reason I graduated high school is because I knew I wasn't going to graduate. So I vied to become class president, and I knew they couldn't fail the class president from graduating.
That's good.
Yeah. And that's what happened. He became class president, and they passed him. So he graduated from high school. But yeah. Good stuff. But yeah, okay. Breakfast of Champions. Go read the book, right?
If you don't do anything, definitely. if you haven't experienced the book, at least read the book. Go read the book.
And then
the book's wonderful.
Yeah, walk into the movie with an open mind and that it's a movie that you'll possibly enjoy the first time, but you may have to watch it a couple of times in order to kind of...
And it's an interpretation.
It's an interpretation.
I give it kudos for really trying to get a vibe, you know, and reflect the emotions of that. And I probably will appreciate it more because this is not the first time that we've done movies I didn't really like. And then after hearing everyone talk about it, I'm like, oh, okay, now I got to go back to it thinking about that. And it's because we don't all see the same things in it.
Exactly.
So, and that's what's great because like, okay, if it make the movie a better, richer experience, then I'm all for it. You know.
I've had that with a lot of our conversations where I wasn't really paying attention to the movie in a certain way, and I'm like, okay, now I got to go back and watch it.
Me too. Very seldom for me because I'm so perfect, but every now and then, one will get over my.
I'll never ask to watch The Descent again, Gadfly. Now that I know how much you suffered, I will never put that.
I didn't talk through that whole time, but if you remember when we did the episode, I said, "Fuck this movie." You know, this movie just, I'm Gadfly. It was too claustrophobic. I could not take it. I didn't, I fast forwarded through it.
Sure.
I said, no, this is not something I want to subject myself.
I just would do that.
And had I known it would have had that effect, I would have never, ever, like, said to use it because we see all kinds of stuff.
It's a good movie.
And that's not the point, too, either.
Yeah.
Because I don't watch movies always to be comfortable.
That's true. That's true.
You don't push yourself.
Henry Torture of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. One of my favorite movies.
Yeah, right.
One of the most disgusting movies I could think of, but it's still one of my favorite movies. But yeah, so watching The Descent was an experience. Yeah. Not one I want to repeat, but it was an experience.
But you went there, okay.
But I went there. No, I get it. And I will go anywhere. You know, I will go anywhere.
I also like heights is a problem for me. So even when I'm watching things where like people are like they fall out of an airplane or the airplane is going to crash, I'm like
Mission Impossible Christ. Movies.
Yeah. I'll watch them, but I'm literally just a fucking ball of tension. You know,
you need one of those like stress balls in each hand. You know, stress squeezers. Again, have those. You'll have forearms like Popeye.
Yeah. I was watching something the other day. A cowboy never like at the Grand Canyon, and the guy goes up and looks over, and I got vertigo. I went, oh
yeah. No, I feel my stomach. I get it.
I still have nightmares about Finn and I went to the Grand Canyon, and there's two ways to get down Bright Angel Point, and I didn't realize that. And we started on the trail that is like literally has this little piece, and then it's off the edge, and it was wet. Yeah. So we got over that, and I'm like, no, we're not going any further, and we went back. And all I could think about for like the next 5 days was that what if he had fallen? What if we had done this? Yeah. And like that is just terrifying to me. So I just don't go anywhere near that kind of stuff. I don't even own like an extension ladder anymore because I get up on those and I'm like, ooh. Don't want to get up.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that's how Kurt Vonnegut died. Not an extension ladder, but a ladder. He was climbing up a ladder to change a light bulb and he fell and hurt him enough that he died from it.
I just remember his.
That could be apocryphal. I don't know. Yeah. That's my Robert Persig story.
That got me in trouble. I'm like, he committed suicide. And they're like all like, no, he's still alive. I'm like, what? He committed suicide. No, he's still alive. Yeah, well, and it's funny because Kurt Vonnegut used to smoke like a fiend up until the end.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He would always have those pictures of him in his book.
Every picture I've ever seen of him, he's got a cigarette.
And then there would be an ashtray with a fucking stack of butts. Like, it hadn't been cleaned in weeks, but he's like, no, that's 2 days or whatever, you know.
He became the modern smoker because Mark Twain smoked how many cigars a day?
10 to 15.
Yep.
Yeah. 10 to 15 cigars.
Yeah, I saw a wonderful picture of him. We were just talking about it today because I love Mark Twain. He's absolutely one of my favorite writers of all time. He's like the beautiful satirist. Yep. And vital read.
A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Wonderful. Life of the Mississippi. Yep. You know? Yeah. So I got this picture of him because he would write in bed. He would sit in bed and write because, you know, they didn't have a typewriter. There were no typewriters. There's a picture of him just sitting there like smoking cigars. So he's in bed. He's got the cigars. He had a big pile of stash of cigars next to him and he's just handwriting. I'm like, oh, that's it. And he would get purposely buy the cheapest cigars he could because he knew that the smell would offend other people. I'm like, oh, fuck, man. Fucking Mark Twain, man. Yes, bad ass. Like, yep, that's great. So, yeah, one of my favorite writers.
There's a comic book that was out that was about apparently Mark Twain met Tesla at some point. And there was all this stuff, but there's a comic called The Five Fists of Science, and it's about Tesla and Mark Twain meeting.
I have that comic.
Yeah, it's one of Matt Fraction's first one. Matt Fraction is one of the showrunners of Monarch, and he was a comic writer. He's one of my favorite comic writers. Like, he's really out there, and
bizarre. I forget who put it out. It might have been Image or Tap Cow or
I think it was Image because it was one of his first things, and it was an independent one. The art's not great, but the story is
fun.
It's ridiculous, because they build a robot, and Tesla's, they have all the Tesla picadillos where he has to eat by himself, and I think it's really good, but. Cool. All right. Well, Breakfast of Champions.
We're off there. Read the book.
Read the book.
I'd say see the movie too, just because for the performances alone. If you don't like everything,
it is a movie you got to see it. And I will watch it again.
Yeah, and the fact that that's the height of a lot of those people's their stardom, and they said yes to the movie. Yeah.
Well, I think you're gonna. I mean, if Kurt Vonnegut wants you, I mean, you're going to jump at that chance.
That's like, what yes. I think.
I
think
I could get a chance to work with him. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, at Breakfast of Champions? Are you kidding me? You know,
well, I think Alan Rudolph got them because he was second AD on a lot of big movies.
Oh, was he?
And that's okay. Before he became a director. So I think he probably did some stuff with a lot of those people and they liked him.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they're like, yeah, we'll do this movie.
Yeah.
Because none of them made any money, and it didn't. I don't even remember it being out.
It was a failure, utter failure at the box office.
Pretty sure it was a failure. Yeah.
Because
I
didn't see it. I saw it on video when it came out. You know, and that was DVD or whatever. And I was blown away. You know, I remember watching it with Roger. You know, Roger was like going, "That's so awesome." You know, and I don't think Roger had read the book, and then he went and read the book, and then he watched the movie again, and he was he's fun to talk with, you know, about stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was always good to one of my favorite conversations with him was about Southland Tales. He watched it.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, "You got to watch this movie." I'm like, "What is it good?" He goes, "Just watch it, you know." And so I watched it, and I think after I got done, he came down because he was living in my house in the dormer, and he comes down, and we had like a 3-hour conversation about the movie. And I'm like, I think I like that movie, you know. So we both went back and watched it again, and then we had another conversation. And you know, to this day, it's one of I really like that movie a lot. You know, if you've not seen Southland Tales, once it comes to streaming, we will be doing that.
We did. I thought we did a show. Did
we? I think we did it.
Yeah, we did a
show. I think.
I'm almost positive we did.
I know we talked about it.
I can't look it up. I'm almost.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I think
I'll find out. Because it's I love that movie. It's crazy.
Yeah, because I think I suggested the movie.
Okay.
Professor Feather never takes credit at home.
Yep. Episode 279, for real.
For real. Episode 279.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty far up there, too.
Yeah, it was not too long ago. I totally forgot we did an episode on it. I'll have to go back and listen to it because, you know, I'll probably enjoy it.
It was a pretty good episode.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a pretty good episode.
All right.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say!
Is DJ ZX, and it is a song called Let All Be Dead.
Like a much slower Prodigy.
Smack my bitch up!
Smack that bitch.
Right.
Arms on fire, starter.
And that's funny because that's Kilgore Trout's message is life. That's all there is life, you know. It's, you know, your life. Mm-hmm. And you have been experiencing.
.com. There's the segue. That's all I'm gonna say.
I dot com'd all over you.
A dot com shot. Where's my sock? Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on the Facebooks, Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on the YouTubes, Montag Lewis on the Instagrams. That is all.
Hey, you have been tarred and feathered. Dot com.
If it happens,
you've been tarred and feathered and then calmed on.
And if it happens twice, it's retard and feathered.
Whoa! Way to get away with that one.
That's about the only way I could.
We freaks?
Yes, We Freaks. Family-friendly comic on Facebook. Written and illustrated, drawn by John the Blue Fez Boys.
Jack Adfly has been hired by Dr. Head for his new corporation. It's called Sock Me Off.
Part of the, I thought that was that famous Russian comedian. Ivan Sock Me Off.
I like my favorite duo is Taran Feja. Oh, Taran Feja. Oh, you are good. You're so good.
Shaco Cinema.
Shaco Cinema. Oh, Shaco Cinema.